Blog Talk Radio.
2006, we all faced with the same bullshit. Black cop, white cop, it don't matter. Bad cop, a cop killer, strictly murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the law is minimal. Police is hiding behind the law because they the real criminal.
When a cop kills,
strictly murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. Cop kills me, the loss is minimal. Police lie behind the law cause they the real criminals.
Yo, the gang in blue steal the pigs, true. Now they got tear gas and billy clubs too. And if he clubs you, don't run from the challenge. Just cock back your hammers and pop one of the cabins. The average policeman lacks proper respect, so I get respect back with the Glock of the tech. Oh, they had me on the deck, so blocking my neck. He'll catch this right hook and get dropped with the left. Who'd expect my enemy to look like me? Black cops showing off, he's just a crook like me. It's like we did the ritual rights we all seen. We should've bust our heat for New Orleans and then bust the phone for the Gulf Coast. They left people there with no hope, cause we poke up most cops, murder us and get slapped with a wrist. Uncle Tom MC scared to rap about this.
A cop killer, strictly murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the law is minimal. Police is hiding behind the law to get real.
We're
criminal.
In the middle of a war, bars on your windows and doors. Your home is a prison, the way we live in is poor. The law got gas, act like we can't hold heat. That's the reason I speak, my folks can't stay sleep. Patrol our own streets, we're living in a police state. Y'all live behind steel gates to try to feel safe. Still race wars erupt, all my brothers are stuck behind prison bars, leave us scars and third eye shut. Rise up, you gotta make the revenue stack before physical combat. Your minds are attacked, so I got stacks of books getting my mind chiseled. Trying to stay wise, exercise my mental. It's simple mathematics, my music is graphic. So this is what you get when the beast attacking. Get at us if you're ready to ride. This one here's for all my soldiers down. I'm never gonna hide.
A cop killer, strictly murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the law is minimal. Police is hiding behind the law cause they the real criminals. A cop kills, strictly murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the law is minimal. Police is hiding behind the law cause they the real criminals.
The new gang mentality, government immorality, worldwide brutality. I know they probably mad with me. Sad to see children living with lies told to the public, cause we living with eyes closed to the fact that police get away with murder every day, never pay for the people they hurt. A word up, the Patriot Act, that's the right back. Now pigs come in the crib and don't have to ask, or even flash a warrant, they at war with my folks, killing people cause they broke all over the Gulf Coast. Most folks obey the law, really might get stopped, and it's a 50-50 chance that you might get shot. And we not shocked to hear about cops getting shot, cause we know how they do when they come on the block making it hot. And when money stops, it's critical police hide behind the law cause they the real criminals.
A cop killer, strictly murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the law is minimal. Police is hide behind the law cause they the real criminals. A cop kills, strictly murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the law is minimal. Police is hide behind the law cause they the real criminals.
Yes, yes. Welcome back, or I should say, I'm welcoming myself back to Your World News. This is your host Solomon. It's been a long time. It's been well overdue. I can't remember. It's been at least a couple months since we've had our last show on Your World News, and much to catch everyone up on. It's been a kind of like a Tribe Called Quest said, an award tour, but this was a tour without the award. So been to Norway and back and everywhere in between, and including going back home to Trinidad. So back here once again for another exciting show, another information-filled show, a show of liberation, of struggle, a show that bucks back at the corporate media that systematically refuses to disseminate information in a clear, in a clear, informative way in terms of issues that, that affect mainly the oppressed masses that continue to languish within the stolen borders, otherwise known as the U.S., as well as news outside of the U.S., especially that news that has to do with oppressed people who have been systematically, directly and indirectly hurt by U.S. policies, illegal wars, and everything in between. So that song that you just heard was Payshear. That was Payshear, a group based out of the Washington, D.C. area, Pay and Bashir laying it down. And the name of that track was Real Criminals. And as you could hear with that song, they were talking about police brutality and the injustices of cops that murder unarmed civilians, mainly black and brown skinned men and women. And so, you know, as we just have left that last Friday, we saw last Friday the gross injustice in terms of the sentencing of Johan Messerlies, who is the Oakland police officer who murdered execution style Oscar Grant, murdered him execution style. The man was handcuffed face down, and Johan Messerlies did nothing less but to shoot him in the back, murdering him. And thank goodness there are people there that caught that crime on camera. But as we see within the United States of America, justice is very elusive. Justice is extremely elusive. So this murderer was sentenced to 2 years. And to compare and contrast, Michael Vick got 2 years for facilitating dogfighting, pit bull fighting at his residency. This guy murdered a black man who had a daughter who has a daughter. She has survived her father, but she is fatherless. And this guy got 2 years. So that should give you an indicator of what this show is going to, we're going to be focusing on a range of things, injustices, but the title of the show is Yo, America, You're Being Pimped. You see Ashton Kutcher, you know, you've been punked. Well, America, you've been pimped, and you're continually to be pimped. And this goes out to the Americans, not the upper crust, not the 1% that controls more wealth than the bottom 90%, not the upper 10% that, is the upper echelon. But we're talking about everyday Americans. You continue to get punked and pimped. So we're going to be discussing a range of things: capitalism, legal wars, healthcare, 53% that goes toward of your taxes that goes to military, the recent farcical midterm elections, critically analyzing that, all that stuff. And so without further ado, I want to bring in my co-host, the co-pilot of this bumpy ride. His name is Peter Fowler, and he's joined us live and direct from Glendale, Arizona. He's in the Midwest, in Ohio. So, Peter, you on?
Yeah, right here, Sam. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and direct, man.
All right, yeah, man. I'm in the capital city of Ohio, named after the lost Mark Christopher Columbus. Calling in from Columbus, Ohio tonight. Good to be with you, brother.
Yeah, that's interesting. That gives you an idea. The guy was a nothing less than a murderer, a rapist, a mutilator, a genocider, and what does he get in return? He gets a city named after him. He gets countless, he's got more than one city named after him, but streets and schools and all that, and a federal holiday to boot, a federal holiday on land that he never even touched, that he never even stepped foot on. And that gives you an indication of when you are in a country that honors a vile devil like that, that gives you an indication of that country's value systems and what kind of justice or injustices you will be met with in that kind of country, the same kind of country that feels it necessary to go around the world and tell the rest of the world how they need to behave. But meanwhile, back in the home front and for its history, they have been screwing people over, plundering, murdering, and everything in between. So, Peter, I want to ask you, what was your take on the recent sentencing of Johan Nezelis to 2 years for the murder of Oscar Grant?
Well, first of all, you know, there's some mixed reactions and some mixed emotions there. On the one hand, you know, I'm outraged, I'm shocked, I'm enraged by it, and on the other hand, I'm not at all surprised. It is not a surprise at all, because that is just a matter of course for the miscarriage of justice in this country that occurs on a day-to-day-to-day and year-after-year-after-year basis. And to see what he got away with is an absolute outrage and an absolute scandal. And I was just talking to my dear friend tonight about that case and the reaction of some of the Oakland city officials, basically telling folks, you know, hey, you may not like this, but you're going to swallow it, you're going to live with it, you know. And part of me really wishes that I were out there in Oakland, because I would love to be part of an uprising out there to let, you know, to say, no, we will not just take this, we will not just swallow this whole, and be told that the lives of black and brown and working class people are meaningless. But what that does is it underscores the fact that in this country there is a policy of disposability, and this country practices a politics of disposability with regard to its citizens of color and its citizens of members of the underclass, members of the working class, a politics of disposability, where in this country we have a caste system, and that verdict, that travesty, that miscarriage of justice was nothing less than a proclamation, a declaration to those of all of us who are not members of the elite, the ruling class, that we are members of the underclass, and we are disposable, and they will dispose of us at any time they choose to, that we live in a police state, and people of color are being murdered by the police state on a regular basis, and they do it with impunity, and no one can argue that. No one can argue that. Right now, we've just seen another instance of it. All the while, we have political prisoners languishing in our prisons. And the case, the recent case with the brother's name escapes me, Ventrone, Veranza, who's been denied, repeatedly denied release, parole. The system has overstepped its bounds in just blatantly refusing justice to this brother who has served his term. He has served his term, and yet still the state refuses to release him. So another example, you know, and we're not talking about ancient history. We're not talking about the past. Okay, people can say, well, Columbus, that was a couple hundred years ago. But the genocide continues from Christopher Columbus in 1492 to the killer of Oscar Grant in 2010. The genocide continues. So, you know, that case, the miscarriage of justice in that case is further underscores the reality that the mentality of Christopher Columbus and the genocidal invaders who overpowered this country are still in control and are still killing people with impunity.
Yep, you're exactly right. You're exactly right, and I'm glad you brought that up. You know, Veranza Bowers Jr. I mean, he right now is languishing in a federal prison, federal correctional facility in Coleman, Florida, and he's served over 31 years. He was a former Black Panther, and even in and of that self, when you look at the political prisoners right now, whether it's the Angola Three or Brother Bowers or Chip Fitzgerald or Eddie Conway, and I mean, we could go on and on. There's a virtual laundry list. You know, what they were doing was you know, being in, with, you know, by their involvement with everything from the Black Liberation Army to the Black Panthers. It's just interesting that they're languishing in prisons, I mean, for onwards of three decades for their resistance to a federal system, a hegemony, a culture that was terrorizing black and brown skinned communities. And that, and,
right.
and without that terror, without that systematic terror and repression, you would have never had Malcolm or Black Panther Party, whatever. Those movements, those individuals were birthed out of resistance to that system. And what's interesting is that this country consistently, where you have a bunch of lunatics on Capitol Hill that will systematically in their speeches, you know, talk about, you know, how this country was birthed out of you know, resistance, and you know, and because the British were persecuting, you know, the people that fled to the U.S. and formed the original 13 colonies and this, that, and the other. But you know, and they pride themselves on that. But when it comes to black and brown skinned people who were organizing and mobilizing and fighting back against state sponsored repression and terrorism and neglect, you know, what you get is you get your ass exiled, you know what I'm saying, in the case of Ashanti Shakur and so many, 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 many others, or you get to languish and decay and rot in federal penitentiaries from coast to coast. And that in and of itself is very, very telling. And, yeah, the brother, you know what I'm saying, he was supposed to get released in 2005 and just consistently gets just railroaded, you know. And he's been a model citizen. He's been teaching other inmates how to read and how to do arithmetic. And injustice is everywhere. It's rampant. But you can't expect any of these clowns from the corporate media, from MSNBC, whether it's Chris Matthews or Ed Schultz, any of the ones that are even considered like progressive, you know, to the right wing white supremacist Fox News. Do you have any of them discussing this? No. No, no, and that's why it's a joke when people even try to like create this this dichotomy between, you know, the so-called right-wing press and the liberal, you know what I'm saying, the liberal media. I mean, when they say that, that's just for obfuscation. That's just to confuse the masses into thinking that there really is, you know what I'm saying, a big difference between the right wing or the conservative and the liberal media. There's virtually no difference in when it comes to the issues that they do or don't cover. They'll cover mainstream corporate issues. They'll cover issues where predominantly it is white people's it is white people's issues who are put in the forefront, and then they just have different opinions on how to look and what kind of prism to look at those. But you don't see the liberal media covering these kind of issues any more than you would see Fox News or the Wall Street Journal, or, you know what I'm saying, or the National Review covering these issues. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. You know, you touch on the media, and that's one of the major vehicles by which, to go back to our theme for tonight, in terms of Americans being pimped, Americans being punked, you know, the media is probably the greatest vehicle through which that punking takes place. You know, it's kind of ironic that, you know, it was a show or a sitcom. I never saw it, so correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, there was a show or something about, you know, you've been punked. And
yeah.
It's ironic, you know, that was on television, when in fact it is, you know, the folks who sit in front of their televisions for hours and hours and hours on end, day after day after day, and take in the message of the media, which pervades the, you know, the ideas of the ruling class, and people, you know, people buy into that because it gets repeated, and it gets repeated, and it gets repeated, and so it becomes like, you know, like that beat, you know, of that tune that you hear over and over and over and over again, you know, and the next thing you know, it's just there, it's in your head, and so, you know, you're bobbing your head to it in the shower. Well, you know, it's the same kind of message that comes through from the media, and so Americans are being brainwashed and being punked and being pimped into doing the things that are not in their interest. They behave in ways and they believe in things that are in opposition to their own best interest, you know. And we saw that just last week in the midterm elections. We saw Americans You know, there was a blogger who had an essay, and the title of his essay hit it right on the head. He said, "The voters of America send a message to Washington: we are idiots." The results of that debacle last Tuesday just demonstrate the extent of the pimping of America and the effect of the media on Americans allowing themselves and putting themselves out there to continue to be punked and to be pimped in the most obscene forms, the most obscene fashions. So, I'm glad, you know, this is a very timely time and place to talk about how Americans are being pimped and are being punked, and hopefully we can get into just who's doing the punking, who's doing the pimping. If we make the proclamation, Americans, you're being pimped. Well, all right, well, you know, who's the pimp? Who are the pimps that are out there? Let's talk about some of those people tonight. Let's say if folks are going to challenge. What does it mean that we're being pimped? All right, well, we have some specific examples, and we can get into that. So now is an ideal time, and now is an ideal time right after the debacle of the election last week to get into some of those issues tonight.
Without a doubt, and if you want to call at any point in time, if you're listening to the show live on November 8th, or you may be listening to it on archive right now, and if you are, thank you so much for your support. Please take the cut and paste the link and send it to all your friends. But if you're listening live right now, November 8th, 2010, at 7 p.m., 7:21 Eastern Standard Time, the call-in number, and you want to call in, you have a question or a comment, you want to get something off your chest, the number is 347-945-5191. Once again, that's 347-945-5191. And as Peter just alluded, the pimps, and in which we'll get into the pimps, that's a great question, because the pimps operate under a system that is the dominant system in this country, hands down, bar none. You know, that begins with a big C, capitalism, and capitalism rules the roost in America, and systematically, people who are being pimped by that same exact system, because of their lack of knowledge of that system and basically indoctrination from governmentally sanctioned educational centers, otherwise known as public schools, because they've been taught their entire lives that capitalism, is the way to go, and socialism is some evil, vile system that kills babies and rapes women or something like that. I mean, basically, the way people talk about socialism, you would think that's exactly what it means. So, it's interesting to see those folks who are without a doubt suffering because capitalism sees no value in human life. It sees value in bottom lines.
Exactly.
They are the ones that seem to defend it the most, Peter. They defend it vociferously,
right.
Whether it's folks living in trailer parks in the somewhere in Alabama, they defend it vociferously as if it this is the system. And I've encountered those folks to even folks in the cities, and it's based on the plan. I mean, that's how they're supposed to think. That's part of the indoctrination. You're not supposed to be able to think critically. You're not supposed to know both sides and be able to analytically look at things and like, wow, this system really seems like it despite the fact that I'm not making a lot of money, I'm making maybe $25,000 a year or $20,000 a year, at least there's a social safety net that allows myself and my children to have health care, to be able to walk in to any clinic or hospital if, God forbid, something happened to myself or my children. It's a safety net that would enable my children to go to any university, any state university that they would like for free, so long as they qualify, so long as they do well and make the grades in school. This is not, people, if you're tuning right now and you haven't heard this before. You haven't been outside the country. You know, this is not a myth that Peter and I are talking about. This is not mythology. This is, you know, there are countries. There are countries throughout the world that provide this for their citizens, a la Norway, a la, you know what I'm saying, Venezuela, you know what I'm saying, a la Cuba. You know, countries that have a lot of money, like Norway does, to countries that have, based on sanctions and embargoes, that have a very, very, very little amount of money in terms of resources, such as Cuba, but still are able to put together world-class healthcare systems that that allow every citizen to be able to have that. It's not a privilege. It is a right. It is a human right to have quality healthcare. It is not a privilege. It is not an entitlement program. It is a right. It is a basic human right. Even the non-effective United Nations has established that. The non-effective, you know what I'm saying, defunct United Nations has even established that. It is a right. But here in the U.S., us, Peter, myself, everyone in between, we don't get that. All right, if you're lucky enough to have a job and they provide it, yeah, you have. But you don't have universal health care in any shape, form, or fashion. And you know, this stupid bill that was passed through because we have a weak president, we have a corporate president, and we have a corporate, you know, Democratic Party. And, of course, we know what the Republicans are about. Don't have to mention them. We, you know, they go through and they push this half-assed bill instead of just going hard like their Republican counterparts, at least their Republican counterparts. As vile and right wing as they are, they will go for the gusto. They don't try to compromise. They're going to go all the way. So the Democrats could have come in there and said, you know what, we're going all the way, single payer system. No, but they went in there, they half assed it, then the thing got watered down to a public option, and even that got watered down to this thing that basically in no shortage of facts entitles these rapacious, mendacious health insurance corporations that, oh, by the way, they also played a hand in actually writing that bill. You know, these health insurance corporations to actually inherit a good 30+ million million customers, while at the same time there's going to be 20 million that are still left off. All right, but you know, if you don't get this crappy, you know, good from these evil snake oil salesman, you get, you know, you could get penalized $3,500. It is ridiculous. It is, Peter, it's ridiculous. And it's not universal health care. It was health insurance reform that benefits the health companies. It's not, I'm sick of people saying that this was health care reform and that Obama pushed this. And he didn't push a damn thing. He took his foot off the pedal. I don't think it was never on the pedal. The last time it was on the pedal was when he gave some shallow words when he was a state senator in 2005 and said, I'm pushing for universal health care, everybody in and nobody out if you elect me to U.S. Senate. And as soon as he got into mainstream politics, he just backed off and backed off and backed off more. Oh, why? Because he got over $30 million from health insurance corporations like Cigna during his campaign so that he could scratch their back, and that's why they moved their little punk asses in and helped write that bill. You know, so that's where we're at, Pete.
Well, I refuse to call it the health reform of any kind because it obviously is not. It was a health insurance revision legislation. The legislation had to do with the existing health insurance corporations and as it is, the corporation control of health care in this country. And it didn't change a thing as far as those of us who have to go through those health care companies to get some modicum of health care. For working class people, it's a disaster. It's still a disaster. There's been little or no change for those of us who have to use those health insurance corporations, and it's been a further windfall for those corporations. And if I'm not mistaken, there is a provision in that health insurance revision legislation that eventually is going to mandate every individual to have health care. Now, basically what that means is you know, it's going to be a law. It's going to be a federal law that people have to buy a product from these healthcare insurance companies, which is absolutely scandalous. You know, and I've mentioned this on this show before, and I'm not ashamed of it. I'm not happy about it, but I'm not ashamed to say that, you know, I don't have health care. I'm in a situation where I'm one of those people that you read about or that you hear about who's lost, who's outside the system, you know, lost, you can go through the cracks or what have you, that doesn't have health care. I don't have access to health care. And so for me, it's a nightmare that I have to deal with on a daily basis. It is real to me, and it is only going to get worse. You know, and you know, as far as Obama, and you know, and his rhetoric, as far as the public option and so forth, obviously he caved on that, and we could fill this whole show with instances and evidence of how Barack Obama has caved and given in to the corporate interests and has just backpedaled on the things that he said that he was going to do if he were elected. We could go on all night about that. And that's another element about how the American public gets punked and gets pimped every 4 years, because they're told, I mean, we're lied to. We're basically lied to. We are lied to every 2 years. Anytime there's an election, the American people are lied to, are just told bold-faced lies by these politicians who just, you know, dress up their message in all this nice language. And then every 4 years, all of those promises systematically collapse over the course of an administration. And it's part of the pimping process. And who benefits? It's the corporations that benefit, because the legislation that was eventually passed, it benefited those corporations who contributed to the Obama campaign, you know, 2 years ago, going back several years. So, yeah, they're the ones that have benefited, and we end up, getting punked again. We got pimped again. And now we have a governor of Texas who's talking openly about states opting out of Social Security. Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, he wants to see legislation that will allow individual states to opt out of providing Social Security to their citizens. Now, you know, and one of the problems is you know, with health care, with Social Security, with all of these issues that are being systematically dismantled by the regressive politicians, you know, if we look at them historically, if we understand how they came to be, we would understand that these are not the machinations of some evil government that is overreaching and reaching into the lives of individuals where they have no business being. No, these were gains that were fought for, that were struggled for by progressives over the last century. You know, if you have if you get to work 5 days a week instead of seven, you can thank a liberal for that. You know, if you only have to work 40 hours a week instead of 70 or 80 or 90, you have a liberal to thank for that. You have a progressive movement to thank for that. You have the labor movement. You have the labor unions to thank for that. You have all these different progressive liberal movements to thank for things like Social Security, to thank for things like the GI Bill and the availability of higher education today. All those things were progress. They represent progress that has been made thanks to liberal and progressive movements demanding that the government do more to meet the needs of its citizens. And so every time citizens turn around and say, no, the government's too big and is doing too much and needs to get its hands out, they are being punked because they are speaking on behalf of the corporations who don't want to make the concessions to working people, because they're more concerned about their bottom line than they are about the lives and the welfare and the well-being of the people that work for them and the people in their community, the people they live next door to. And that is a process of pimping and punking that's being carried out every single day. And we're seeing more and more of it as the political climate in this country becomes more regressive. Now, don't confuse that. Now, let me be clear. Don't confuse that with the American population becoming more regressive. The American population, American citizens by and large, tend to still hold those liberal and progressive ideals. Yet and still, like I said earlier, it's the ideals of the ruling class that tend to be the ones that are manifest in policy and are held largely, especially because of the increasing role of corporate media in this country. And as you alluded to earlier, Solomon, the formal indoctrination that we call public education. So every day these things are going on. It's just a matter of recognizing them for what they are.
Right, and what's interesting is you know finally on the whole healthcare thing, you may have those folks that may be listening to us right now, and their gut instinct is to say, well, you know, because and as you mentioned, this is what they've been fed by the liberal media, is that, you know, well, if he would have you know, stuck to his guns and gone, you know simply, you know, just full steam ahead with single payer, then the Republicans would have tried to filibuster and they would have obstructed it and this, Danny. I mean, that's what they did anyway. That's what they did anyway.
Right, right,
they obstructed and they delayed and delayed. But if you can't use the large numbers that you had in both sides of Congress, in the Senate and the House of Representatives, if you can't use those numbers, you know what I'm saying, to push through legislation that you told people in 2006 that if they elected you, you were going to fight on their behalf, and then you had tens of millions of people that voted for Barack Obama. I wasn't one of them. I voted for Cynthia McKinney, but you had tens of millions of people that voted for him based on the fact of the change that they thought was going to come about. They thought they were going to see some tangible change. They thought that when he got into office and everything, obviously everything doesn't happen overnight, but there are things that you know, he initially like quickly signed in. He signed some fake thing that he said he was going to close Guantanamo. That was a lie. Guantanamo
right.
was still not
right.
closed. He said he was going to fight for healthcare reform, and people were expecting this single payer. They were expecting. I mean, shoot, you had physicians for a national healthcare plan. You had, you know, which is, you know, something like 30,000 to 40,000 different physicians in this country that signed on to that, basically saying that there should be a single payer healthcare system in this country, and they were completely behind that. If you're not going to, if you know, and that's why I tell people that say, oh, well, he couldn't have, whatever. You know what I'm saying? This is part of the change that people that voted for him thought they were going to see. They thought they were going to be able to see and touch and to kind of be beneficiaries of some real change, some real progressive change. And what they got was the total, just basically the rolling over like a dead dog capitulation to a Republican Party that said, yeah, you got numbers, but we don't give a F-U-C-K. We're gonna
right.
get our checks and we're gonna whatever, you know what I'm saying? And you know what? And we're gonna do this all for our constituencies. Our constituencies that expect us to be as right wing as possible, to be as right wing and conservative and to say that we're about the street, we're gonna beat our chest for our constituencies. What do the Democrats do? The vast majority of them, they roll over into a fetal position and just capitulate. Oh, we gotta do this. Okay, we'll water it down a little bit. Oh, that's not enough. Oh, we're gonna go ahead and water it down even more. You know, and then pass this piece of crap. And then that's where the whole theatrics comes out. Then you have the Republicans that are like, "Oh, this is crap. This is crap." Where really the Republicans got much more leverage on that than the Democrats, and still that wasn't even enough for the Republicans. So now that they have the House back, they're going to push for repealing this piece of crap, you know, legislation, and they put it out there, and it's all about that charade to make their constituents be like, yeah, many of the constituents, Peter, which is really kind of interesting. I would have to laugh to keep them crying if they don't have health insurance themselves. You know, they don't have health insurance themselves. And Meanwhile, you have, and this is beside me, we have, and this is, I'm going to go to this clip right now from Barr, is that you have black unemployment double that than whites. You have black folks with no bootstraps to even think about pulling up. So the whole platitude that we hear all the time, you know, pull yourself up with bootstraps, it's crap. So I want to play this bar that the Black Agenda Report and Brother Clint Ford, www.blackagendareport.com. Check it out if you haven't been there. I want to play this and I'll get your feedback up. This everything talks about it, and also people who still, well, I would say, blindly continue to support
The two devastating recessions of the last decade have had catastrophic effects on black economic prospects. Yet, despite the monstrous setbacks of recent years and the general failure to bridge the racial wage and wealth gap over the last three decades, there still exists a strong current of black political thought that insists African Americans can pull themselves and the rest of the race up by their financial bootstraps through hard work and pooling of collective resources. Some of these arguments are unashamedly black capitalist. Others preach a brand of communal partnerships among black entrepreneurs and consumers that attempts to make the entire black community a kind of capitalist engine of self-help. What binds the variations on the bootstrap theme together is an essential refusal to challenge the capitalist system. The belief is that black buying power or race-based investment schemes will allow black folks to rise from the bottom of the American economic barrel. Implicit in this line of thinking is the notion that blacks are at the bottom because they have not been trying hard enough to move up, which is also the assumption of white racists, whether they call themselves conservatives or liberals. The most fatal flaw in the black capitalist worldview is the assumption that black people actually have the wealth and discretionary income to build an internal economy that could insulate them from the general capitalist crisis. We no different, because all the data tell us that black household income is stuck at the same level relative to whites as back in 1979, and black comparative wealth was steadily eroding even before the last decade's recessions. And we know that black wealth has been further diminished relative to whites in the ongoing housing meltdown, in which blacks are twice as likely to face foreclosure. And we know that blacks, a majority of whom are renters, bear the brunt of the dislocations caused by rampant gentrification, which in some urban areas forces families to spend more than half their income on rent. Simply put, there ain't no damn money for these bootstrap capitalism dreams, and there never was. There was never the possibility of building a black General Motors, and now General Motors requires billions of dollars in federal infusions to survive. What a great distraction this nonsense about bootstrap racial upward mobility has been. So much time wasted and misdirected dreams over the generations. Worse than that, the bootstraps mythology, sometimes under the shorthand do for self, implicitly or explicitly urges black people to forego making demands of government, as if that amounts to begging the white man for something. This attitude surrenders all black claims to any of the society's resources except those we currently hold in our own pockets, which is the equivalent of social death. President Obama also warns blacks to expect no redress from their government. At a recent press conference, he once again urged blacks to be patient, that when the economy grows, everybody will be swept up into that virtuous circle. It never happened before, and it never will. Blacks need to do for self, but not as aspiring capitalists. We have always made our greatest progress in political struggle. That is the promised land that we make together. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
Peter, comments? Hello? Hold on. Peter, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you, Solomon.
Okay, all right, perfect. What are your comments?
Glenn is on point once again, you know, and his statement about, you know, the time and the energy wasted, an entire generation has been wasted. If we go back to the civil rights and black power movements of the 50s, 60s, and early 70s, and the enormous amount of energy that existed at that time, and then we look at how it was diffused, you know, and one of the ways it was diffused was by the federal government and in concert with all these capitalist entities, corporations, and businesses, co-opting a lot of those black power leaders and the leadership and the followership of the civil rights movement and the black power movements into black capitalism. You know, and there's a bevy of books out there available that talk about that for folks who are listening and say, well, you know, I don't know about all that, but it's a fact, it's a history, you know, that as black capitalism emerged, that is the period of time that Glenn is talking about. You know, if we look at what the picture of black wealth in this country. It hasn't changed, and so in other words, the dream of capitalism has been a total illusion. It's been a total mirage for Black America. Black capitalism has not at all furthered Black America in its entirety. And like Glenn said, you know, the Black community needs to do for self, but not individually as aspiring capitalists. Not as aspiring capitalists under the value system of rugged individualism. It needs to be a movement, a collective movement, as a community to resist capitalism and move in another direction to fight for a system that is going to serve the needs of an entire community, going to serve the needs of people rather than to serve the balance sheets of corporations. And capitalism, I mean, what more proof do we need, Solomon? What more proof do we need that this system of capitalism does not work? And that's a nice way of putting it. It doesn't work for working class people. It doesn't work for black and brown people. But it does work for 0.1% of this country that owns everything. Well, that's the capitalist class. And that's what folks need to see. People need to understand that capitalism is a predatory system. And for those of us that are on the other end of that system, that are not amongst the capitalist class, we're being punked, we're being pimped, we're being used, we're being exploited, and capitalism is the problem. So there is no way to creatively recreate a type of capitalism in which, you know, to focus on black America, you know, to create a black capitalism that is going to bring, you know, black America into some sort of equity and equality and a level of wealth that Black America deserves in a country that is as wealthy as the United States. Capitalism is the problem, not the solution. So I love to hear Glenn say that, and that's a message that needs to be spread far and wide. And you know, we need to look no further than what has happened in the last 2 to 3 years, particularly with Black America and how the wealth of Black America has been totally wiped out by the housing debacle and the mortgage debacle. And, you know, the fact that American dream is being exposed to be a sham, is being exposed to be an illusion, I think might be the first step in actually taking some corrective measures, where folks can step back and say, you know what, we've been hoodwinked. To borrow some Malcolm X language, folks have been bamboozled. They've been hoodwinked. They've been fooled, and see that maybe we need to look an alternative way instead of trying to seek the answer and seek the solution in capitalism, because it doesn't work. The housing debacle, the mortgage debacle, is demonstrating that, and Black America has been devastated economically.
Right.
by the recent events in this economy. The free market system itself has been exposed to be a fraud. If the events of the last 3 years or so hasn't proven that, then nothing will. Folks need to open up their eyes and realize that. The free market mythology is an absolute fraud, and people who continue to believe in it, continue to hold hope in it, are utterly delusional, Solomon, delusional. They commit their beliefs to a non-existent reality. It's a lie, and if the events of the last couple of years aren't proof enough, then I don't know what possibly could be. But if we go back and look at the history, let's just go back 100 years and look at the boom and the bust cycle capitalist system in this country, and just, I mean, and globally, you know, not and beyond the borders of the United States, but globally, and look at how capitalism functions and the bailouts, the government bailouts that are absolutely necessary for capitalism to exist. And I'm, you know what, and you know we can include under the rubric of a government bailout is permanent war, a state of permanent war. You know, if it weren't for World War II, the Great Depression would who knows how long it would have gone. It wasn't President Roosevelt or the New Deal policy that brought the United States out of the Great Depression or the world out of the Great Depression. It was World War II. It was a machine that generated a lot of wealth and a lot of jobs and so forth. And we are in a position right now where, you know, the United States government is essentially capitulating to the fact that it needs a permanent state of war to continue to maintain its stranglehold on global resources to perpetuate the capitalist economy to prop itself up as an economy. So right there, I mean, those are realities enough to demonstrate that capitalism is not the answer. There's no amount of regulation, there's no amount of tinkering or tweaking to a system that is designed to be predatory that could possibly fix it. Capitalism is the problem and needs to be tore down, and we need to start with a system that can serve the needs of people and not corporations. That is about the welfare and the well-being of human beings, and not corporations. I mean, we're to the point now, Solomon, where the government recognizes corporations as persons. I mean, and that is utterly absurd, absurd on its face. So, you know, Glenn raises a great point, and it's something that we need to take seriously. It's a front burner issue. It needs to be developed. Folks need to be taught the truth about capitalism. They need to understand why there's this housing debacle, why there's this mortgage crisis, and who's benefiting. Somebody, you know, it's a crisis for who? It's a crisis for the homeowners. It's a crisis for the working class who's trying to live in a house. But it's a windfall for the banks and these finance institutions. They're getting rich. They're getting wealthy off of people's misery. That is capitalism, and that is capitalism at its best. For the kleptocratic class, the people who are stealing the wealth from the working class, and it's Black America, once again, who catches the brunt of the hell. So if Black America continues to hold on to the ideals of capitalism, then, you know, there's just more misery in store.
Exactly, and it's a system that is non-negotiable. You can't go in there thinking that you know, that we're going to negotiate, that, you know, we're going to negotiate something with capitalism and have some kind of happy go-between. You know, it is as hardcore as you know, as we can imagine. It's a system that people don't even, you know, because we've been trained not to think critically, you know, in this country. Like, people are trained not to think critically, that there's no kind of intervention along the way where somebody gets the kind of infusion of critical thought and how to continue to hone those critical thinking skills. People, it's right, you know, it's almost like the old Alfred Hitchcock episode where the wife, she murdered her husband with a mutton leg, the detectives came in there and they had all this conversation with her and this and asking her all these questions and so forth, and you know, they're trying to to find the murder weapon. They can't find it in there. And meanwhile, she's baking the murder weapon. She's baking the mutton leg, and then, you know, asked them if they want to stay for dinner. They sit down, and one of the detectives goes, you know, I feel like we're really close to getting to breaking this case. I feel like it's right under our nose. and their plate, they have this thing, and it's a classic episode. But, you know, right here, right under people's noses, like the evil and just utter disregard for humanity that capitalism has. You have like a minimum wage. Do how many people think about that? A minimum wage. This is the minimum amount that by law anyone is able to pay you. So regardless of the fact that it's $7.45 an hour, and you know, if you work 40 hours a week at minimum wage, you're still, I mean, you know what I'm saying, you cannot, at that wage, you work 40 hours a week at minimum wage, you cannot sustain yourself in this country. And say you have like a family, say there's two people in the household that are making minimum wage, and they have a couple kids, and they're working 40 hours a week. They're not going to be able to pay their rent. They're not going to be able to produce, you know, to purchase groceries, you know, in any kind of regularity to keep their kids, you know, stomachs filled. They're not going to be able to pay for public transit, all those different things. The minimum wage, basically.
Think about why we have that.
Yeah, exactly.
Think about why is there the minimum wage? Because the federal government had to step in and tell corporations by law that they can't pay people less than this amount. Because if corporations had
right.
their way, they would pay people as little as possible. They would
exactly.
if they could get away with it, they would
exactly.
pay people a nickel an hour. That is the nature
exactly.
of capitalist organizations. They don't care about whether or not the people who work for them have any kind of life whatsoever. They
exactly.
are predatory, so the government had to intervene to say, no, you can't pay people less than this, and it's still a joke, like you
yeah.
said, it's still totally inadequate.
Right. We have a caller, actually, very pleasant to see. We have a caller from, it seems, the area code is at least Atlanta, Georgia. Caller, you are on the line. You should, caller, you're on the line. You have a
okay,
question, comment?
Folks, how you doing?
How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
What's your name, please?
Sarge.
Sarge, okay.
Sarge 57, yeah. It's
welcome
to
Your
to
World
you.
News.
Pardon me?
Well, I said welcome to Your World News. You're on live with Peter and Solomon.
Thank you.
What's
very much.
What's your question or comment?
Yeah, my comment is I see you're not too enchanted by capitalism and free markets. Actually, I prefer to go with free market capitalism than capitalism. I assume you'd like to substitute for it some form of socialism and or Fabian socialism and or Marxism and or communism. Is that a safe assumption? Or you tell me what you would replace it with.
Is that a question? I would replace it with a socialist democracy, with a socialism that one might see in more humane countries, a la, let's just take an example, just because I just came from there. Let's say something like Norway, all right, where you know, I can probably already tell that you're a big fan of the free market capitalist society that we have here. So even like a place like Norway, you still have elements of capitalism. But
no, sir, actually,
you know,
I'm a fan of the United States Constitution, and the United States Constitution, if it's applied correctly, is fundamentally designed to prevent socialism.
Explain that one to me, Sarge. Explain that one to me.
Because, first of all, the principle upon which this government was founded was not, as many people on the left love to say, you know, slavery and genocide. That's not what it was founded on, even though, you know, I know they like to trot that out.
They didn't have to say that, Sarge.
I shouldn't anticipate that, but that's what I hear all the time. I mean, I hear it so often, it's almost a cliche. But actually what it was founded on was on several things. Number one, first of all, a federalist system that dispersed power among three branches of government. Number two, It was founded on, and also among 50 states, well, not 50, at the time, 13 colonies, 13 states that had been founded in the Constitution.
All right, okay, go on.
Number two,
enumerated
Bill of Rights. Number three, enumerated powers of the government. Now, the federal government under our Constitution, until it's amended, through the amendatory process, has absolutely no authority whatsoever to legislate in most of the affairs that it legislates in today, such as Social Security, health care, Medicare, Medicaid. Now, I'm not saying whether this is a good idea or a bad idea. I'll deal with that separately if you'd like. But it simply has no authority, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. It's not there in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution that gives Congress the enumerated powers. It's not there under any of the subsequent 27 amendments to the Constitution. They simply have no authority. They abrogate it. They just take it. That, sir, is tyranny. And when you talk about economics, free market capitalism, and so on and so forth, our Constitution was designed to prevent exactly that. All these things you want, the federal government has no authority to legislate in. Good idea or bad idea, it's irrelevant. They don't have the authority. They're supposed to have enumerated powers.
What is the authority of the federal government in your conception of it then?
The federal government, again, separation of powers, number one. No one branch encroaches upon the powers of the others. All bills for spending have to originate in Congress, specifically the House of Representatives. And those bills that do originate have to be in accordance with the various articles of the Constitution and the powers that the Constitution enumerates. And I'll guarantee you, you will not see anywhere in the United States Constitution that they have the authority to order us to buy a health care plan from a private provider. Nowhere. I defy you to show me where it is. Or to create a pension plan or a Medicare plan for it. Now, under the rubric of the 9th and 10th Amendments, the people retain that power to do those sort of things through their states, if it's not prohibited to the states by the Constitution. If Massachusetts, as they did, wants to set up a disastrous health care plan, which they did, they have the authority to do so. Same thing with Illinois and Kansas and California and all the other states. But they don't have, the federal government doesn't have the authority to do it.
Okay, so the federal government doesn't have the authority to encroach on states' rights is what you're telling us. So
I'm saying they don't have the authority to legislate in certain matters, which they do.
The state has a right
to create a health care plan.
Sorry, this is my program. You spoke. Let Peter finish his question, his question or his comment, as we surely did, because I'm trying to figure out your point. Because within what we mentioned, we didn't mention anything about that we've been giving our opinions and perspectives on the comparison between socialism and capitalism. We've been talking about this bullshit bill that was just passed in terms of health care reform. We haven't mentioned the Constitution in any shape, form, or fashion. We didn't mention just going there and just placing a huge blanket over America and placing socialism throughout America. I wish I could, but we didn't mention that. We've been comparing and contrasting, and so I'm trying to get what you're getting at by quoting the Constitution, which is nice, and it's nice. Peter and I can do that, and we've done that in the past on our previous shows. And if I had my druthers, just like what I think are more civil societies, they have revamped and issued referendums to revamp and update their constitutions, a la in Venezuela, a la what we just saw in Kenya, a la in many countries have updated their constitution that was outdated, that quite frankly was written when it was written in the interest of a few. And we know that the original framers of that constitution, I don't know what your background is, Sarge, but mine is, and really it doesn't matter, because even if you're black, it doesn't matter that you, doesn't mean that you don't have the politics of somebody like Jim Boehner or something like that. But their shaping of that Constitution, even the Declaration of Independence, was not shaped in the interest of anyone besides rich white men. Okay?
I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you, sir. We have a fundamental disagreement. I just don't agree with that.
You don't agree?
Absolutely. I'm a black man, sir, and I don't agree with you. I agree with Frederick Douglass.
Condoleezza Rice is in black. Sarge.
Wait a minute. Okay, let's forget that. You're right.
They don't agree with me either.
I agree with Frederick Douglass. Do you know what Frederick Douglass said?
Sarge, I'm asking you a question. Do you think that the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, those two documents, do you think they were written with the interests of enslaved black Africans that were languishing in America at that time? Do you believe that? I'm asking.
They are the greatest documents to liberty and freedom in the history of mankind. Yes.
Well, we have a fundamental disagreement. I know we do. We definitely have a disagreement. First of all, Sarge, but I'm prepared to back up what I say. Someone that displays themselves as, you know what I'm saying, as erudite, as you are trying to display yourself, I asked you a straightforward question. And you didn't answer. I'll answer the question. Yes, I do. Why? Now back it up, please. Tell me. I'm asking you.
All right.
If you'll notice
from its inception, the document incorporated a clause to end the importation of slaves into the country.
Oh, my goodness.
Because you don't want to hear it because you've been brainwashed, sir. Probably all these Marxist professors have told you all this deconstructionist nonsense about how the Constitution is a racist slave. I can prove to you it is, and you don't want to hear it.
Answer the question. Substantiate why you think that the Constitution was written including the interests of African slaves. Instead of going on these ad hominem attacks, just answer the damn question.
All right, let me finish. Because at the time the Constitution,
if you're not going to answer the question, I'm going to cut you off so we can finish
the
show. Answer the question.
I'm trying to answer now, and apparently it's not adequate. So would you please ask me the question again? Maybe I can get more specific to your life.
Peter, you want to ask him because maybe he's not in my language. You want to ask him the question, Peter?
You want to talk about the Constitution. If we just read the Constitution and understand what is in it.
Just ask me a question. I was going to answer it.
Peter, just ask him the question.
Does the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence have the...
What? You think you cut off there.
Peter, are you there?
You cut off, Peter.
Yeah, all right. But yes,
it does. Yes.
Do you remember the question now, so I don't have to reiterate? Do you remember it?
Yes, please reiterate the question. Because Peter was going to do it, and I'm not sure. Because I really want to answer this question. I really do.
We can't have one person dominate. We have a lot of people that are trying to call in. So let's get to it. All right, so Peter's back online. Let him answer the question, and then please give us your best, well-formulated, concise answer once Peter asks.
All right, let me make sure I'm giving the right answer.
Peter,
give the question so I can make sure I got the
Peter,
right
you're
question.
Back on.
Right.
Peter, you're back on.
I apologize. I lost the call there. Did the Constitution, Declaration, did they have the interests of black Africans or anyone other, as Salma said, anyone other than landed white men? Were those interests in mind in those documents and demonstrate how they were?
Yes. Now, may I say why?
Please.
Yes. Incontrovertibly, absolutely, utterly, yes.
Well, you said demonstrate why they were.
Okay,
that's what
I'd like to do. When I start to sue it, you guys cut me off.
All right, do it, please, for God's sake.
All right, because
please.
In the mission statement that was the Declaration of Independence, it set forth ideas heretofore never seen in the world about what a government should do with respect to individual rights and liberty. And in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, again, in a manner hitherto never seen in the history of mankind, you had a government with limited power, with a guaranteed Bill of Rights for all citizens, and with an amendatory process. Again, never before seen in the history of the world. Was it imperfectly realized? Yes. Was it the best thing to date? Yes. Is it still the best thing to date? Yes, because it contained within it the seeds for change and course correction, unlike any other government, in a nonviolent manner that would allow such things to be done. Absolutely. It is the greatest document to liberty, freedom, and peaceful transitional government in the history of mankind. I don't see why you can't see that. There was a limiting device in the Constitution for slavery itself.
What I can't understand is why you can't see the major contradictions.
And I do see them, sir.
Listen, I'm about 1 second away from cutting you off because I try to give everyone a fair shake. But if when I go to talk and you can't respect my program, I'm cutting your ass off. It's as simple as that. I'm not playing that. All right. So what I'm saying is I don't understand how you're missing the contradiction at the same time, you know what I'm saying? When we look at when it took slavery to end, all right, at the same time, these men.
Yeah, 80 years after the country was founded.
You know what I'm saying? And then we had another 100 plus years of Jim Crow. We had legal lynchings throughout the South, at a period where we saw black men getting lynched on average once every 3 days. And so, it's just interesting to me that you tell me all these Marxists. I never had a professor, unfortunately, that was able to discuss and compare and contrast the differences between socialism and capitalism. And you don't need to mention Marxism. These, as you know, socialism is a broad thing, and under that you have different forms of socialism. You have communism, Marxism. So get that shit out there. I mean, stop trying to, like, you know what I'm saying, to be condescending or patronized, whatever. Let's stick with where we were talking about socialism and capitalism. All right. So unfortunately, I didn't have any professors. It's information I had to seek out on my own to read everyone from Hume, from David Hume, on, you know what I'm saying, to Adam Smith, and then reading everything from Marx to Engels, you know what I'm saying, and everything in between, so I could critically compare and contrast. You know, and then to take a look at societies that employ both, and what I thought was a more, and it's just that to this day, was a much more humane way to treat, you know what I'm saying, to treat human beings. And so when you say it's the best piece out there right now, that Sarge, as you know, that's your opinion. You can't say definitively, yes, it's the best thing out there right now. It is your opinion. All right?
Yeah, it
and
is.
So, What I'm asking, in a country where 44,000 people die each year because of lack of health care, all right, and you don't see that going on in countries throughout Scandinavia, Western Europe, Venezuela, even Cuba. Even Cuba has one of the top five health care systems in this world. I'm just trying to where it encompasses everybody. What about the tens of millions of people in this country who languish each year and 44,000 that die because of lack of health insurance, and supposed to be the greatest country on the planet on planet Earth? I'm not getting everything from the contradiction of the slave owners, the slaveholders that wrote the Constitution, to everything with health care and your aversion to a more socialist form of health care in this country.
And the concept of the free market is an absolute delusion, Sarge. There is no free market. There's no such thing as a free market. I mean, that's another thing that I have yet to have anyone give me an explanation as to how this market capitalism is free at all.
All right,
it's an utter delusion.
We might have some agreement there. What we have today is a lot of crony capitalism that's very much akin to fascism. And particularly with Barack Obama in the White House, or the presidential palace, I should call it, with him in there, yeah, he's got all kind of his buddy crony capitalists running around with him, from GM to the AIG to all these others. Now, I will tend to agree with you there. Yeah, they have corrupted the free market system of what we should have more of. I didn't say entirely unregulated. That's not what I mean, because there is a place in the Constitution for some federal regulation for some businesses. I don't have a problem with regulation per se. I have a problem with this crony fascist capitalism that what's going on between the collusion between the government and much of big business, who seek to use the government to get an unfair advantage over their competitors. So I might agree with you on that. Yeah, we don't have free market capitalism in this country to the extent that we should have. You're right. but we'd like to get it back.
All right.
And we're going to work on that.
All right.
Your question about health care, and I'm trying to understand how it is that a system that will get, look at what's actually happened. We don't have to go on theories anymore, sir. We have a real world database in which we can now draw with Barack Obamacare. And that is that now they, and not me, sir, he said, his office management and budget and all the other people in this administration say that fully half of the health care plans that exist now will not qualify once Obamacare is implemented. That was a lie. They lied to us. They said you can keep your health care and your doctor if you want. We now know it is a flat-out lie. They say so, sir, not me. They say so. So we know 51% of plans are going to be. See, the whole idea of this thing was to get us all on single player, stealth, unnoticed, after they got through lying to us. Like, you know, when Joe Wilson got up and said, you lie, he was lying about the fact they were going to put illegal immigrants on the doggone thing. It was a lie. We now know that's a lie, too. Because most of the time, in order to implement their agenda, leftists and socialists have to lie. They can't tell you the
really?
Truth. They
well,
can't
Obama's
tell you the truth.
Left.
I mean, you can
Obama's
read 2,500 pages and you
who
will
you
see the
to?
Innumerable lies
who,
in the doggone thing.
Who,
just read
Josh,
it.
Who are you referring to? Who are you referring to? Would you say
socialist? What kind of a plan is it that makes rationing inevitable? By
other
telling
words, you don't
doctors
know what you're talking
best.
About. Sarge, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know
yes,
what
I do. I'm
going to
quote from the plan. How
you
about if I quote from the plan? How about if I read from the plan? Is that okay
what
with you
plan?
Or is that not good enough?
What plan? What plan,
the health care plan,
what?
2,500 pages that Nancy Pelosi said we had to pass in order to find out what's in it.
It's not socialist, Sarge, because you don't know what socialism is. So
oh, yes, I do. Do you want me to give you a definition? I know what Marxism is. I know what communism is. I've read Karl Marx. I know all of it.
No, you don't. You don't know what you're talking about.
I'm going to define it for you, sir. Do you know what communism is? Because I do.
Sarge, let me ask you a question.
Don't tell me I don't know when I know.
Sarge, let me ask you a question. What is the difference between socialism and capitalism? Let me just a basic thing. I know the answer. I just want to know because you keep referring to Marxism and communism, which were never things that Peter I mentioned.
They're not
the
same thing. Communism
is
a political expression of Marxism, and Marxism is a theory.
So why do you keep bringing those up?
Because
number one,
where they fit, I bring them up. Like I use fascism, which is akin to communism.
We didn't mention Marxism or communism at all. All right, you know that's a totally different dialogue.
When the shoe fits, you should wear it.
And Obama is not a Marxist, a social. Unfortunately, he's not a socialist, and unfortunately, he's not a leftist.
Well, you haven't read
his
book because I have his book on my shelf. I've read his book. I got dreams of my father on my shelf. I read his book. If he's not a Marxist, I don't know what the definition is then.
I don't care if you have dreams of his mother.
That's my dad. You don't know.
He wrote a book,
no,
sir. Doesn't that mean anything? He writes a book, and it's full of Marxist theory, but we shouldn't pay attention to it.
You have no clue what Marxist theory is. Obama doesn't.
Yes, I do.
Obama,
yes, I do. Marxism.
So you're telling me,
yes, I do. I'm going to give you a definition. You seem to think I don't know it. I'm going
to
quote you the definition of Marxism.
Socialist.
Marxism is a theory of Frederick Engels and Karl Marx, and it holds that all progress in society is obtained through dialectical materialism. And dialectical materialism is a theory that... again, progress is achieved through struggle, class struggle, the dialectic between the bourgeoisie, the petite bourgeoisie, the worker class, and eventually culminating in the creation of the dictatorship of the proletariat, where the workers control all the means of production. That's Marxism.
Okay.
That's the theory.
Okay.
Okay.
So
now, don't tell me I don't know these theories. I studied them. I do.
I beg to differ, but I want to know what. But even based on what you just said, what is the relationship between Marxism and communism and Obama?
Communism is a political expression of Marxism.
Unfortunately, I read both of his books too, and nowhere in that did it indicate anything where he said, or even any indicate. indication that he was a Marxist or he was a communist.
Oh,
nowhere.
So he doesn't say it. That means that he's not saying he's a liar too.
But let's take an intellectual.
I mean, I
catalog
the man's lies, and he'll tell you he's not a liar either.
But listen, now you're starting to lose me, Sarge. Sarge, you came in and you were quoting the Constitution. You know what I'm saying? And although you were giving your perception of the at least you were accurately quoting the Constitution, but then you were giving your opinion, which I totally disagree with, but at least you were staying with things that were written in black and white. And now
you mean like Marxism?
You're deviating to something where now you and the rest of your Tea Party buddies are making your wild, delusional interpretations that Obama, even though it doesn't say anything, and he's never said it himself, unfortunately,
he's a liar, sir.
He's a
you won't say it.
Because he's lying.
Listen.
Okay, you just know that he's a socialist, even though he has never said it.
No, he's a Marxist. I believe he's not a communist. He's not a communist. You are delusional, and we are wasting...
Solomon, we're wasting our time on this delusional fool.
You're frustrated because you think you can corner me and you can't.
No, we can't have influence to someone who talks nonsense.
All right, look,
you know, you're just living in another world.
I don't think he's a communist, sir. I'll be very specific. I think he's a Marxist.
Well, you're wrong.
Okay,
you're flat out wrong.
So you said you think, all right? So you think.
Yeah, I'll tell you the evidence upon which I base it.
Because you can't, but that's the thing. When you say you think, that means that you can't scientifically.
Okay.
You cannot scientifically.
I think when you spread the wealth around, it's good for everybody. Yeah, when the government spreads the wealth around, it's good for everybody. That's not good enough. I understand. It was a throwaway remark. That's not a statement, a mission statement. Well, look, you know what? When a guy fills his cabinet with Marxists and communists, and people who admire Mao Zedong, it's kind of a clue to me.
Name one Marxist.
How many presidents prior to him have had cabinets filled with communists like Dan Rollins?
People who display open admiration
for the greatest mass murderer in human history, Mao Zedong, and so on and so forth.
Hey, Sarge, I don't agree with his cabinet. But not for the same reason you don't.
Hey, Sarge, man,
did you hear the beginning of the show where we were talking about your great old country that worships Christopher Columbus, who is one of the greatest mass murderers?
He was in town working for the Spanish. What's that got to do with the United States?
Let's stick to Americans. Let's stick to.
Let's not hold the United States responsible for something that happened 300 years before it came into being.
Hey, Sarge, let's stick to George Bush, who was a mass murderer as well. Over a million Iraqi civilians killed. Let's talk about Henry Kissinger, Sarge, and the role Henry Kissinger played, in supporting Suharto and the mass extermination of people in East Timor and Indonesia, and Hammond and Gerald Ford telling Suharto, don't start your mass killings until we get out of your country, and don't start until 48 hours because of what it looked like. And it's on the Freedom of Information Act, Sarge. So you probably won't admit those things, Sarge. And with a name like Sarge, I'm sure that you are a huge proponent of the military-industrial complex.
Absolutely.
The military-industrial complex.
For the armed forces, yes. We got the best one in history. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. I can't stand it. I know. You're not used to somebody like me, but I won't put up with the nonsense.
I ain't politically correct.
I got to answer for every one of your arguments, and you just don't like it. Okay, Sarge. We are used to you, and people like you. You're not used to. Sarge, let's just agree to disagree. We're at an impasse. You're not gonna speak anything poorly about Kissinger.
I prefer clarity to agreement. You've been fairly clear about what you believe, and I've been clear about what I believe.
When it comes down to it, Sarge, I'm gonna end on this. You don't give a damn about people suffering and dying
because of lack of healthcare.
And you don't give a damn about about the legal words that are done in your name.
You don't
give a damn about those things, Sarge. We are as diametrically opposed as
absolutely,
anybody can.
Absolutely, and we are going to oppose this socialist agenda.
So you continue, Sarge, to rally with your Tea Party folks. I'm glad you're
we're going to fight. It's going to be a fight. We're not going to allow it to go without one.
We're going to fight.
What kind of fight is it going to be? Whatever dimension it has to assume, whatever. We're going to work through the political process to try to stop. But whatever it has to assume, we intend to stop it.
Whatever means necessary. So you're leaving the door open to a violent revolution, right?
I'm leaving the door open to whatever it takes to stop anti-constitutionalism. That's what I mean.
Is that on the table?
Am I clear? Whatever it takes.
man, you are an interesting man, and beyond
that. You haven't heard interesting yet.
No, I guess I haven't, and if it's more of the same of this.
No, but believe me, I can answer you from a principled, historical basis.
I don't have to make things up.
Unlike socialists, you've got to make things up, they got to airbrush history, you familiar with Stalin airbrushing Trotsky out of the pictures? That's what socialists tend to do. They airbrush history and pretend that it didn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. Sarge, let's just end this, and you can go back to listening to your favorite selections of speeches by Henry Kissinger.
No, I think I'll read
and
the Federalist
and George
paper,
Wallace.
Sir. I think that's
and,
what I'm going
to
do.
Good. You need to read all 82 of them, Sarge. You need
I will.
To read all
I'm going
to
work on
them again.
And I suggest you do the same.
I've read all 82 and James Madison and the vile, you know what I'm saying, characters that they were.
Another vile tyrant in history.
Without a doubt, I know that when I was picking that cotton, you'd be in that house asking Massa to continue to give those
scraps. No, and I won't be on that Democrat liberal plantation, the same one that destroyed my two-parent black family and made us 70% out of wedlock for no
fan.
Hey, I won't be on that plantation. I can guarantee you that.
You're a fan of slave owners, man. You're a fan of slave owners.
No, you're not the slave. The slave masses are Democrats.
You're a fan
That's
of slave
party
owners.
Of Jim Crow. That's the party of the Ku Klux Klan. That's the party
of
every foundational civil rights act from 1866 to 1972. That's the party of Jim Crow. That's the party of all that stuff. You're on this plantation, not me. Hey, the Ku Klux Klan was a terrorist arm of the Democratic Party.
I am not a Democrat. I know all about the Dixiecrats, and basically the Republicans are today's Dixiecrats. I know all about the Democrats.
I am neither.
Do you have a problem with, let's just say
what party were the Supreme Court justices who instituted Plessy versus Ferguson, what party did they belong to? Jim Crow, who did that? Democrats.
I'm not a Democrat, nor I'm a Republican. And if you know your history, today's Republicans are yesterday's Dixiecrats. All right, and you know the move that Nixon made to, like, you know, win over.
Oh yeah.
Southern,
so let's just forget about every support for every slavery was in every Democrat Party platform from 1820 through the end of the Civil War. So let's just forget about that, and let's just think about Ronald Reagan's Southern stuff. Oh my God!
For the whole world to hear your politics, let me ask you a straightforward question: do you have any problem with George Washington and Thomas Jefferson owning African slaves, enslaved Africans?
Do you have any problem? But you know what? To the extent that they owned slaves, they participated in tyranny.
Do you have
owning
a problem with
tyranny? But wait a minute, let me finish. Because you know what?
Do you have a problem?
You guys love to talk about context and everything else. I just answer your question. It's tyranny. Okay, but let me finish.
Ask you a question. You have a problem.
You know what?
You
might
like tyranny.
Let me finish.
Answer the question.
It's tyranny. It's tyranny.
No, you didn't answer that question.
All right, but
I'm going to answer. Answer. I said first, and then you can expound. Do you have a problem? Yes, or don't tell me it's tyranny, because there's some people that enjoy tyranny, like it. I'm asking you, do you have a problem with the likes of Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Andrew Jackson being slave owners?
Yes, I have a problem with it. But, you know, can I continue it? I answered your question. Yes, it was wrong. It was evil. But you know what? Those three men, with the exception of Jackson, because I'm not a Jackson fan, I am a Jefferson and Washington fan. I think Washington was the greatest American in the history of the United States, despite the fact that he was a slave owner. You know why? Let me tell you why. Because they contributed something to liberty and freedom that, to some extent, mitigated it. Unlike other tyrants in history, without George Washington was the indispensable, most indispensable single individual to the Revolution. Without him, it's highly unlikely it would have succeeded. He was utterly indispensable. And why? Because of his character, honor, integrity, and courage, and leadership. There wouldn't have been a United States without him. So to the extent that, yes, he was a tyrant because he owned slaves, but to the extent that he contributed something new to human freedom, which was a success of the United States, to that extent, he mitigated it. He mitigated it.
So let me retort, all right? So you just said human freedoms. And what's interesting is that there's no secret of what kind of vile things George Washington and those folks imposed indigenous Americans, all right?
He got along very well with the native populations.
What you're talking about didn't happen until later.
I mean, there were wars in the Eastern Indian tribes and the colonies, but George Washington's relation with them was quite good.
They stole land, they plundered, they cast them off, and it's to what we see today, a little over 2 million indigenous Americans left because they had been killed off systematically. This was their land.
How many Indians were living in the United States, the entire territory, when Spanish colonists arrived here? How many do you think lived here in total?
You want to talk about the whole Americas from the top, from sea to shining sea.
How many Native Americans live here?
From Canada all the way down to Argentina, there were anywhere between 50 and 70 million.
If you count Mesoamerica, maybe, but not on the North American continent.
Listen. You just asked me, and I just explained to you.
Your figures are wrong, sir. They don't hold up any anthropological scrutiny. The high figure was 8 million on the North American continent.
Listen to me. I'm not going to quibble with somebody who has inaccurate facts. All right. So let's just say though, even though it's wrong, it was much more than 8 million.
I know it's wrong in North America itself. In fact, I bet every single penny I make for the rest of my life that your figure is wrong.
What is your point? Because liberals make things up.
They just make up their own figures when it's so.
What is your point about these people who had their land stolen?
Look, I'm not going to try to argue against the fact that enormous atrocities were committed against Native Americans. That's not an argument. But see, when you got to make it up, why didn't you just tell the truth? The truth is bad enough.
You want to talk about, why you got to make things up? What am I making up, Sergeant?
The numbers. You go with the numbers. I guess the real numbers aren't bad enough. The real numbers are bad enough. Let's go with the real truth.
Sarge, I'm gonna end this conversation because like you're just gonna, you know, and I hope that you go and you pick up some books maybe by Zen and Churchill and some another
yeah
book,
yeah Howard
and
Zinn,
read,
another
read
commie
more,
oh,
and,
God.
And another
yeah
commie.
I know about him
all right you're an interesting guy and through all of it you seem
I got Howard Zinn, a people's history of the United States. I got his book, too.
All right,
yeah, I got his book. I read all you comments.
Goodbye. All right, that's great. Continue to justify and go back to your fireplace and continue to listen to the great works of Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon. Well, that was an interesting dialogue, folks. And well, that was great. Seems like due to technical difficulties, I think that we lost Peter as well. Hopefully, he'll call back in. But that was really interesting. And perhaps, yeah, I kept the guy on longer than I should have. But you know what? Not every episode does Your World News get a chance to have a real black Tea Party member call in and voice their interesting opinions in the revisionist history and just skirt around issues. And I mean, I don't have to recap it. You guys heard it all. When asked very direct questions, and I mean, the guy is a fan of Jefferson and Washington, and referred to Jefferson as the greatest American of all time, despite the fact that the greatest American of all time in his book owned African slaves. And when it came to the question about the role that George Washington played with Cherokee indigenous folks, skirted around that and basically justify that as well. And so, yeah, if it was hard for anyone listening to stomach, I'm sorry, but I think it was, you know, I think it was an important watershed moment in the history of Your World News, and definitely won't have somebody going that long again, you know, in terms of talking over myself and Peter. You know, we have to have some kind of modicum of decorum on air, and especially when you get to a point where there's an impasse and this an individual likes to continually create revisionist history and bring their, you know, it's fine to have your own opinions, but you know, you can't bring your own facts. And anyways, yeah, that was interesting. I'm catching myself now, folks, but And here's a special song that I'd like to dedicate to Sarge, and then on the other end, we'll finish with this show. But there's a brand new song out by one of my favorite hip hop groups out right now. That's Dead Prez. It's a great song, and to me, two of the greatest American-born Africans of all time, Malcolm X and Dr. Huey P. Newton, and one of the greatest Pan-Africans of all time, Marcus Messiah Garvey. His song is called Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey.
Malcolm Garvey Huey.
Dedicated to
all political prisoners. Life is like a movie. Study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm
Garvey Huey. Life is
like a movie. Organize everything I do's revolutionize. I build what's good for the whole damn hood. Study G's like B's, really think you should. I study Malcolm Garvey Huey, Malcolm Garvey Huey, Marcia Cody with the Uzi, listening to Fela Kuti. I'm a goon with the machete, especially if it's jelly. Got the Santos for the Hexy to protect me, so respect me. This is heavy, legendary, revolutionary. My wifey, she resurrect me when they thought they had me buried. Took me out the cemetery, now it's family over every, cause that's all that's necessary to avoid the commissary. I'ma live for you five, so I stop getting high. If you know, then you recognize it's that black and brown pride. It's the power of the mind, RBG, God divine. You can see through the lies if you can read between the lines. I live, I die, I organize. Everything I do, revolutionize. I build what's good for the whole damn hood. Study G's like these, really think you should. Study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Bungie, Bobby, Pac, and Duke.
sitting by the door so you can say I'm acting spooky. Just like in the movie, son, you better pack your toolie. Niggas wish be acting fruity, you'll be cracking like they pookie. Rather smoke a doobie than be burning and eluding. Bang, bang, pig shooting, we should blame Rudy Julie. Yanny for the camera, shine white and nose candy. Let you banging on the system, you a gangster wearing panties. RBG, my family, from the Bronx to Miami. Police cannot stand me, Pacquiao like a Manny. Call me Little Bobby Hutton, cause I'm first to push the button. Rappers don't be saying nothing to the system, we say fuck em. This is for Nahanda, mama, see mama, Akua. All the real OGs, I'm a soldier, cause you told me study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, young reporting in the duty.
Sticky, icky, yours truly, here for duty. Don DeVino, M.A. Uno, you know how we drop the jury. This is real, not a movie, not Mickey, Donald, Goofy. I'm a soldier, I avoid a bitch, nigga, like the cootie.
School face in a hoodie.
Fresh pair of khakis, we can do this like we fam. I go to war like the Apache, for whatever, I stay ready. I learned that in Tallahassee. Babatunde used to school me as a juvie, skipping classes. Never let the system use me. My duty is my passes. Watch the homies in your army, they don't always show their badges. Keep your family living healthy, teach your children about their blackness. Teach your wifey how to use the ratchet. This shit is classic. Get your food, clothes, and shelter. Fuck the system, pimp it backwards. I ain't hating, I'm just saying. If you wanna be a rapper, study
Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey.
A tactical approach is designed to get certain.
Yeah, that was Dead Prez, Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. That's some hip-hop that you will definitely not hear on the corporate media because much like folks that sometimes, unfortunately, call on our show, have a very limited understanding of the range of hip-hop that is out there that they're not getting and systematically, you know, they're placed into these, you know, boxes that have been provided for them by the corporate media, but that's the kind of revolutionary music that especially brown and black skin kids should be able to have the opportunity to listen to and because that music speaks much more in much more volumes to them and their struggle, their day-to-day struggle, whether it's Southeast DC or Southwest Detroit or South Central LA. Songs like that speak much more to their struggle and much more to ideas and perspectives and philosophies that can get them out of the situation that they're in, you know what I'm saying, in terms of organizing and having a revolutionary mind with that organization and organizing your community from block to block, you know, the same way the great El Hajj Malik El Shabazz did Malcolm X. So did anyone, you know, we're into the discussion on the show, we're going to call them again. We started the show off talking about Oscar Grant and police brutality, police murder, and the injustice in terms of these police that are murdering black and brown skin men coast to coast. You know, at the very most, getting a slap on the wrist, as Johan Mezelius just got last Friday with the sentencing of 2 years. But this is a clip that was on Black Agenda Report a couple weeks ago, and where Glenn was commenting on a recent story that was in the Guardian in UK about police brutality in Great Britain towards black folks, and he was comparing and contrasting police brutality in Britain as opposed to the U.S. and vice versa.
The United States criminal justice system has been called the most racist on the planet, and by most measures, that's true. But blacks in Great Britain are also under siege by police, enough to generate a recent visit to London by Reverend Jesse Jackson. A new study shows that blacks in England and Wales are 26 times more likely to be stopped and frisked on the streets than whites, a figure that Reverend Jackson said undermines the moral authority of the United Kingdom. It would be hard to criticize the analysis for sloppiness. It was conducted by the London School of Economics in collaboration with the Open Society Justice Initiative. On the face of it, the figures would seem to indicate that blacks in England and Wales are targeted by police with even more ferocity than their counterparts in New York City, where a similar stop-and-frisk campaign has scooped up progressively larger numbers of blacks and Latinos in recent years. In England, Section 60 of the 1994 Criminal Justice and Public Order Act was originally promulgated to deal with rowdy soccer hooligans, most of whom are white, but has in recent years turned into a mechanism to disproportionately stop blacks. New York City's stop-and-frisk regime has drastically escalated under billionaire mayor Michael Bloomberg, who has also dramatically ramped up the pace of gentrification. Strong pressures also exist in England to contain the non-white population. But are the police in England and Wales really more viciously racist than New York City cops? With black Brits 26 times more likely to be stopped than whites, while black New Yorkers are only 9 times more likely, one might conclude that the English cops behave in a more racist manner. But the sheer numbers of stop and frisks in New York City may say otherwise. In 2009, only about 150,000 people were stopped on the streets in all of England and Wales, home to 54 million people. New York City has 8 million residents, less than one-sixth the size of England and Wales, but its cops stopped nearly 600,000 people, 4 times as many, the vast majority of them black and Latino. The conclusion: when English cops stop someone on the street, it is more likely to be a black person than a white, more likely than when New York cops make a stop, 26-1 versus 9-1. But U.S. cops stop a much higher percentage of the people, about 25 times as many per capita. What that would tend to indicate is that a black Brit might think he had it bad in England, but he'd be more likely to get picked up and stopped and searched on the streets of New York, because of the sheer volume of stops in the Big Apple. The same applies to prison. The black-white incarceration ratio is worse in Britain than it is in the United States. But the U.S. imprisons 4 times as many people per capita as the Brits do, and holds a full 3% of the black U.S. population behind bars. For blacks in Britain, it's only 1%. So yes, it's true. The U.S. does have the most racist criminal justice system in the world. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
Yeah, that was right on point. And, you know, that's why it's so important for us, honestly, to continue to keep our eyes on the ball. Those of you that are listening right now that are interested in real progressive change, you know, in this country, because it starts, if we want to see a better world, it starts here, because the U.S. epitomizes so many different injustices that have become just part of, like, the regular culture, that so many people don't see them as injustice. They see them almost as justified. And so when we hear of a black man being shot, intrinsically, a lot of times people will often say, you know, what did he do? You know, what did he do to deserve to be shot, you know? So the benefit of the doubt goes with the police officer and not with the young man that had his life taken. And so it's really important for us to keep our eyes on the ball and not to allow folks to shape and frame our public discourse, what becomes our public discourse in our communities. We can't allow them any more than we can allow people to come and reshape and revisit history and create some revisionist history that glorifies, you know, oppressive white men, whether they wrote the Constitution or not. You know, these individuals enslaved Africans. They stole land and killed and oppressed,
you know, millions of Native Americans, and that is without a doubt fact. No matter how much or how little somebody wants to look at the actual number of Americans or Native Americans that existed on throughout the Americas, which is what I said. I never said North America, but he wanted to truncate it. But throughout the Americas, but even that number of 8 million is not accurate. The number of Native Americans that were in North America alone before Europeans got here was much more than that. But you know, looking at various historians, you know, such as that cover this stuff, such as Ward Churchill and others, we know those numbers are much larger, and we understand that it didn't just occur here in what's known as the U.S., but it occurred in Canada, it occurred, you know, throughout the Caribbean, you know, in South America, and goes on today. But as long as we allow people to reframe historical fact and record, and allow us to be taken for, you know, in a position where we are glorifying individuals, regardless of who calls them the founding fathers. I don't give a damn who calls them the founding fathers, whatever they're called. If you enslaved other human beings through chattel slavery, and you stole the land and brought havoc and carnage to indigenous people, I don't care what somebody calls you, founding father, founding mother, you are an evil human being, and your paper that you write a constitution on at the same time in which these things are going on doesn't, you know what I'm saying, is trash, and doesn't hold the weight of the paper or the ink that is on that paper in any shape, form, or fashion. So we have to keep our eyes on the ball. We have to continue to mobilize. You know, link up with people in your community. I don't know where you're listening right now. You may be listening in the UK or whatever, but link up with people in your community. If there aren't people in your community, start an organization. But find, you know, those organizations that are in your community that are doing progressive grassroots work on the ground for those people that are systematically disenfranchised within your community. And if it's not in your community, if those things aren't occurring in your community, then look to communities that have those issues. Just because an issue is in another community doesn't mean that you can't and your work can't find your way there. Just like it's important for American-born Africans, commonly known as African-Americans, to look at, you know, to not allow a body of water, the Atlantic Ocean, to prevent them from doing work and advocating on behalf of continental Africans who are facing colonization and facing corporate plunder day in and day out, you know, and having their resources benefit the coffers of Western corporations and Western governments. You know, we have to take up that. That has to be our rallying cry. That has to be our rallying cry. So, it's vastly important, and I hope that this show continues and has been a platform for people to allow themselves to tune in, to listen to different perspectives, ideas, to listen to news and critical analysis that you're not going to get from the corporate media. And if it spawned anybody to have any ideas or anybody that wants to connect, you know, if you're listening online, you can send me a message on the website that you're listening right now. Send me a message and, you know, just go to the message part on Blog Talk Radio where you're listening right now and send me a message and let's work, let's build. You know, I'm not one of those radio show hosts that wants to hide behind a mic and not get in the community and working on behalf of other folks. I mean, that's my responsibility. If there's anything that I can do any shape, form, or fashion, I will, you know, just like the work that I'm doing, I'm doing right now. I don't do it for fame or glory. I do it for, I do it because it's my responsibility to work in the prison system and in the juvenile detention centers that are near me, working with other activists in this area to try to reduce the recidivism rate and working with inner city youth. That's my responsibility. Those are the things I'm supposed to do. So if there's other things that are going on that you think that I might be able to lend a hand or Peter might be able to lend a hand, email us, send us a message. You know, let us know. You know, let us know how we can help out in any shape, form, or fashion. If there's a story that's going on that's not being covered, that's important in your area, let us know. We'll, you know, contact us. You know, we'll get on the program. We'll get on the program and we'll broadcast it loud and direct. That is the very least that we can do. So, without further ado, I want to play another song before we get out, because I'm feeling real revolutionary right now. That dialogue, if you want to call it that dialogue, really got the best, really got the best of me. So I really want to thank SARS for that, because that really, it brought up the best in me, and I'm feeling energized. Actually, you know what? Here's a song. Since SARS is clearly a Tea Party supporter, SARS, this song is for you. This is dedicated to you. This song is "If the Tea Party Was Black." I think it's an interesting song, and so I'll play this. And this may be the last word for Your World News, but if you haven't heard the song, it's interesting to say the least. What if the Tea Party was black?
The main principal political voice coming from the right now is the Tea Party. And even though you have a Tea Party that's very angry, a very racist message, they're armed, oftentimes they're portrayed as just being patriotic and just wanting to do what's best for their country in America. And I ask myself the question, what if the Tea Party was black? What if these were black people? How do you think they would be portrayed by the media?
Party was black, holding guns like the Black Panther Party was back. If Al was Russ Limbaugh and Jesse was Sean Hannity and Tavis was Glenn Beck, would you harm their families? If Sarah Palin was suddenly just a soldier, would you leave it to the voters to go and get the soldiers? Y'all know if the Tea Party was black, the government would have been had the army attack. What if Michael Bazin was on your FM dial for 3 hours every day calling the president foul? Would they say free speech to find evidence how to charge him with treason like he's un-American now? What a minister Farrakhan prayed for the death for the commander-in-chief that he be laid to rest. Would they treat it as the gravest threat or never make an arrest? Even today, still hated for less. What if President Obama would have lost the election, quit his job so he could go talk to the left and bash the government for being off of direction, fraught with deception, and told black people they want all of our weapons and we want our own country and call for secession? Would he be arrested and tossed in correction for trying to foster regression against the people's lawful selection?
Our question, what if the Tea Party was black, holding guns like the Black Panther Party was back? If Al was Rush Limbaugh and Jesse was Sean Hannity and Tavis was Glenn Beck, would you harm their families? If Sarah Palin was suddenly just a soldier, would you leave it to the voters to go and get the soldiers? Y'all know if the Tea Party was black, the government would have been had the army attack.
What if black people went on Facebook and made a page that for the death of the president-elect we prayed? Would the creators be chased and thrown in the cage? We know the page wouldn't have been displayed all these days. What if Jeremiah Wright said that everybody white wasn't a real American? Would you feel scared of him if he had a militia with pictures that depict the president and Hitler? They would kill and bury that. Wait, what if Cynthia McKinney lamented the winning of the new president and Hennedy wasn't really a true resident with no proof or evidence? Would the media treat it like a huge press event? They would have attacked whatever group she represents. They would have called a recruit on precedent, and any network that gave a due preference would be the laughing stock of the news. So our question is, what if the Tea Party was black, holding guns like the Black Panther Party was back? If Al was Rush Limbaugh and Jesse was Sean Hannity and Tavis was Glenn Beck, would you harm their families? If Sarah Palin was suddenly just a soldier, would you leave it to the voters to go and get the soldiers? Y'all know if the Tea Party was black, the government would have been had the army attack.
Everything that is getting pushed through Congress, including this health care bill, are transforming America. And they are all driven by President Obama's thinking on one idea, reparations.
Yeah, so that was an artist. His name eludes me right now, but if you type in Google, you should be able to find it pretty easily. And I think that the concept of the song was right on point. We know that we live in a very double standard based society. And if the Tea Party was black, we definitely would see a whole lot more backlash coming, and we wouldn't see the the routine genuflecting that you know went on with the media, continues going on with media in terms of that love affair. But yeah, that was a spot on song. So anyways, we are at the end of the show. Thank you for tuning in, you know, continue to push for equality and justice, period, you know, because right now, as we said in the beginning of the show, Americans continue to get pimped, and most Americans have no idea what to the extent. But, yeah, if we had a more socialist-based society, I will say it. I wish we had a more socialist-based society. It would be a lot less suffering that's going on right now, needlessly, because right now the capitalism is the capitalist system, the uber-capitalist system, unfettered capitalism, whatever you want to call it, free market, whatever you want to call it, it's literally taking lives, you know, at the tune of 44,000 a year at least when we just look at the healthcare industry, or lack thereof. So we got to expand our minds and keep on pushing. So this is, once again, this is Solomon, and on behalf of Peter, this is Real World News. Peace, and continue to struggle and fight.